Enlightenment is hard. Consider Professor Chandra in author Rajiv Balasubramaniam's delightful new novel, Professor Chandra Follows His Bliss. He is a conservative Cambridge University economist who, in the course of a few days, does not win the Nobel Prize, has a heart attack, gets hit by a car, gets no love from his estranged children or former wife, and is told by a California doctor who happens to be in England, "You gotta follow your bliss, man." And thus, a Homeric journey is launched. Maybe one that follows the path the author took? Welcome, Rajiv Balasubramaniam.
Thank you.
What fun. And your character ends up at Esalen, the meditation center in Northern California, after he punches his ex-wife's new husband in the nose. You ended up in the, is it the Dhammadipa Meditation Center in England?
I did. That's where I originally started meditating in England, yeah.
Now, there's a stereotype of these centers as either, you know, complete elitist scam cults or life-changing spiritual awakening centers. Why did you go and what did you find?
I went because my life was in crisis and it seemed like it was the only thing that I hadn't tried yet. And this was so extreme and I felt that I was in an extreme position in life and needed an extreme solution.
Yeah. Drinking pretty heavily. In fact, I think drunk the night before you end up at Dhammadipa. You were skeptical?
I was more terrified than skeptical. I was very, very, very nervous. And then, but I went there and I managed to survive the 10 days and I meditated as best I could. And I thought, well, that's that. That's the end. And then a few days later, I started to fall apart in a spectacular fashion. And it was really like starting from the beginning again. I had to figure out who I was from day one. It felt as if a mirror had just been held up to my face. Yeah. And I was being forced to see everything all at once. And then slowly over time, that became a process that I worked through.
Being reminded of growing up being racially abused in England, you're the child of immigrant parents. Stiff upper lip, you weren't supposed to talk about this stuff?
Exactly. Okay. It was all achievement-based and not emotion-based, which will bring us to the novel is a modern economist's take on life, is that it's all about the external, it's about the material and not the inside.
Right.
I'd neglected the inside and I'd focused on achievement.
As has Professor Chandra's. This is your character. He, you know,
exactly.
And the achievements were going to be a Nobel Prize, and that doesn't happen. And this starts this tailspin, but it's all about achieving. And there's a couple other storylines here. First, I'm sure there are listeners saying, wait a second, your family's from India. Of course you meditated. You know, you probably did yoga too. But what Professor Chandra also struggles with is that not all people from India did this kind of internal searching.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I grew up in a very atheist household as well, although it's possible to be very religious and very unself-aware, as I think we all know.
Right.
But I grew up with a physicist mother and an economist father, so that's a very externally focused worldview. And, you know, of course, Professor Chandra goes to California to find his bliss. He doesn't go to India. I mean, in a way, you could say that the two continents are sort of switching places. You know, India's becoming full of billionaires. Its GNP is rising very fast. It's becoming much more materialistic. And Americans are looking for spirituality increasingly.
Yes, you plop him in Esalen in California, where, you know, he's suddenly sitting with his eyes closed in a room filled with strangers who are, in a very American California way, suddenly pouring their guts out to him. Mm. It's hilarious. It's also kind of poignant.
Well, I think there's a lot of sadness in the novel as well as humor. And I think that most comedy is the flip side of sadness. And the tragedy is that Professor Chandra is such a high achiever and has gained so little joy from life. His achievements have been at the expense of joy, and that his relationships are so weak. And so finally, at the age of 70, he begins to realize that.
Well, also, this is post the global crash of 2009. You know, he drops names of other economists, Milton Friedman, Kenneth Galbraith. He considers book titles like In Praise of Wealth or Why We Need Corporations. You made me actually think of one of my neighbors, Matthias Sen, who was a Nobel Prize winner. His economics, though, is about making sure that poor people have some kind of an economy.
Well, Matthias Sen would be opposed to the neoliberal consensus that Professor Chandra emerged from, that he represents, and opposed to Milton Friedman and the Chicago School. So he would be effectively Professor Chandra's nemesis. Did you notice the references to Sen in the book? There are a couple.
Oh, brother-in-law?
Not by name. The professor abuses him a couple of times. because Sen did win the Nobel, and his politics are the opposite of the professor's. So, yeah.
Oh, this is hilarious. So Amartya Sen, who is, again, a Nobel Prize winner, who's devoted his life to helping the poor people. So he's represented. And there is this anger the professor feels about the change in thinking about economists after the crash. Back before the crash, economists and policymakers were respected technicians, the ones who made things work, the ones without whom the system would fall apart. And then came the crash. And nowadays, every economist and their dog claim to have seen it coming, but he had to admit he didn't even know what a credit default swap was. Huge battles with a daughter who seethes at the bailouts. She says it's a bunch of bankers in shiny suits who pulled knives on us and took $1 trillion from us. And he responds, and this is over breakfast, without capital injection, we'd have a global run of the banks, which means key industries would fail, which would mean no food, nationwide blackouts, rioting in the streets. I think the bailout is an acceptable price to pay. So you take us into how, perhaps your father, but how an economist felt during those times.
Well, I think until 2008, 2009, there was a broad consensus, the neoliberal consensus, or what used to be called the Washington consensus. And then after the crash, it simply broke down. We had Occupy, we had Bernie Sanders, we had Jeremy Corbyn in the UK, and now we've got Ocasio-Cortez, and everything's changing. We're getting young socialists, millennial socialists and Generation Z socialists. And economists are suddenly realizing that they're no longer being treated like the know-all gods that they used to be, and that they're having to depart from the consensus too. And I think that they spent such a long time being the leaders of the tribe, and suddenly they're being dismissed, and so they have to deal with that.
Well, you have your professor dealing with that. We don't want to give anything away because the twists and turns are just fantastic. Esalen is just the beginning. And he goes, again, as we said, on his Homeric arming journey to find his bliss. But meantime, you were told by a publisher that your book was part of a new genre that you had to look up. We did too. Uplit? In other words, uplifting literature?
Right. Well, I hadn't heard of it either. I suppose if I had to characterize this novel, I would call it heel-lit as opposed to uplit. You know, the upliftment is not the most important thing for me, but I think it is a novel which encourages the reader to go on a healing journey with the character. There was no prescribed response that I wanted, but I was very, very happy when readers read the book and said that they felt that it had helped them to heal a little bit or to think about healing or to think about their relationships.
Well, but can you attribute that to someone who now does meditation? As you say, retreats maybe every 6 months, maybe meditating every day. You said you were filled with rage before you began. And now here you come out with this, you know, uplit book. Are you worried that you've killed off, you know, the part of you as an author that might want to go to that rage place?
No, because the rage comes back. negativities come back all the time. I think I've just captured a snapshot of something very positive in me. But, well, if I felt that I'd overcome all my negativities, I don't think I'd care about writing novels anymore, to be honest. Mm. But that's I'm certainly very, very far from that place.
Well, and isn't it also true that anyone who says that because of meditation they've gotten rid of all of their negativities is probably not telling the truth or hasn't really gotten meditation?
Absolutely. I mean, it's almost always the case. And that's why people who meditate can be so obnoxious or so terrifying, because they're trying to tell you that they're better than you are. And I think it's, you know, it's about the shadow, right? That this character, Sunny, my German translator, said to me, it seems to me that he's your shadow.
We should say Sonny's the professor's son, who becomes this hipster economist, a billionaire, who founds the Institute for Mindful Business and tells people they can make millions by having positive affirmations.
Yeah, and I thought that's a really great observation, because the creativity, I think, comes out of the shadow. It comes out of our dark places. Yeah. And so if we estrange ourselves from our shadow, then we estrange ourselves from our creativity.
Huh. Again, it's a terrific read called Professor Chandra Follows His Bliss. Rajiv Balasubramanian, thank you so much for talking to us about it.
Thank you for having me.